I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Brendan Brazier joins me now, the former professional triathlete and two-time Canadian ultramarathon champion, has a new book, Thrive Energy Cookbook 150, Functional Plant-Based Whole Food Recipes. Mr. Brazier is also the creator of the product line Vega and an advocate for plant-based nutrition. I'll ask him about his veganism, the food that we'll find in this book, how easy it is to prepare, and its benefits. Brendan Brazier's previous books, The Thrive Diet, Whole Foods to Thrive, and Thrive Fitness, have been international bestsellers. He is also a nutrition consultant to many professional and Olympic athletes. The website for more is at brendanbrazier.com. This book is published by Penguin. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Brendan Brazier. Mr. Brazier, good morning.
Thank you. Thanks, Joseph.
Thanks for joining us. So you dedicate the book to your grandmother, and there's a photograph of her in the front of the book. She's bicycling on the Lionsgate Bridge, I guess. Is that right?
Right, yeah. Yeah. I believe that was 1942, and it was, of course, back then, you know, you don't get photos very easily, but her father was a photographer, so we got a great shot there, so I figured, you know, that would be a good place to use it.
So what habits of hers have you emulated in your life?
Well, she was very much, she just would kind of do what she thought made sense. She wasn't the sort of person who was like a cheerleader and would, you know, try and have you do what she does. She would just kind of go about her business and do what she thought made sense, and then others would usually follow. She's quite active, obviously, there. She's riding over the bridge, but even as I knew her as my grandmother, she would swim each morning, and she was quite active, would walk quite a lot as well, and just always, I think, a good example of, you know, living a pretty rich life.
So my eating habits, my diet habits are not, you know, they're not in line with yours, obviously, because I'm not in terribly good shape. But the one thing I enjoyed about reading this book is that it the food looks good. And you don't have, as you spoke of your grandmother just a moment ago, it's not a very preachy sort of book. You're not telling us how bad we are.
Right. It's exactly. It's just trying to make good food look good. And I found a great photographer locally, Kevin Clark in Vancouver, who shot the photos, and I really enjoyed working with him. I did that in April of last year in his studio here. And yeah, I had a pretty clear idea of how I wanted the food to look. We started calling the style organic modern, which is, you know, simple. There's not a lot of props. It's just kind of shot in really good natural light for the most part against natural backgrounds, and that's what I wanted.
So in terms of the sort of lifestyle that you lead, the food that we get in this book, and then you contrast it to what we're eating in our daily lives, I guess, why do you think it is we're eating crap?
Well, I think there's a few reasons. One, it's accessible. It's very accessible. It's easy to get low-quality food. You know, it's cheaper, too. For the most part, there's a lot of subsidies involved in keeping, you know, meat and dairy available on a mass scale. When you look at the amount of resources that goes into producing a hamburger, for example, the amount of land, water, fossil fuel, if that was fair market value, the hamburger would be, you know, $35+, and it would be out of reach. No one could buy it, and they wouldn't buy it, and it would be not accessible. So subsidies are one reason. Another reason is a lot of that type of food has an addictive quality. Like, literally, it is a chemical addiction in the brain for many people. When they eat a certain way, there's certain chemical reactions that happen that keep people wanting to eat that sort of food. But as you slowly get away from that and you start eating better food, your palate changes and your desire for different types of food change, which is great because then you just eat whatever you want to eat, but what you want to eat ends up being really good food. But there definitely is a transition period, and I actually have recipes in the book that are marked as transitional, meaning that they help people go from a standard American diet or just a diet that's not as good into a better diet, but doing it easily and not kind of jumping right in and becoming frustrated when they can't stick to it. So I think transition phase is really important.
So you don't suggest that one goes into sort of the Thrive Diet wholeheartedly. I mean, you do have to transition, right?
Right, yeah, absolutely. If someone's eaten a standard American diet for 4 decades, it will take a while. It is going to, you know, it could take a year for that person. But if someone's eating quite well already, then the transition will come more quickly. But, yeah, one thing I found when I was researching all this is that change is stress. It doesn't matter, even positive change, eating better food, of course, is positive. But your body still has to physiologically adapt, like more fiber, for example. You know, your digestive system has to get used to that, and it does. It does take a transition period.
That's the one thing that I found interesting in when you talk about, I guess you were 15, and you started training for triathlons, that you learned that it just wasn't exercise and training that you needed to succeed, that you needed a diet that, that provided you the energy to do what you were doing. And I guess the key there is you get energy from food, but it's also the energy that you use in digesting whatever you're eating.
Exactly, and that became something that I really did focus on, because before I was kind of going the conventional route and looking at, because a calorie being a measure of food energy, the more calories I ate, I figured the more energy I would have.
Yeah.
But, of course, that's just not the case. If it were people who ate 3,000-calorie fast food meals would have a huge amount of energy, and of course the opposite is true. So what I found, of course, is that you spend energy to digest food, and the more energy you spend, the less energy you have. It's pretty simple that way, really, but something that a lot of people haven't really come to, but I found it through athletics. And also, you want to get a lot of nutrition in. It's not about getting calories in, it's about getting micronutrients, so vitamins, minerals, phytochemicals, antioxidants. That's what you want. So you want to spend the least amount of digestive energy, but you want to bring in the most amount of nutrition. And that's what I call high net gain nutrition, which is one of the central ideas of this book and of actually all the books I've written on nutrition. That's kind of one of the guiding principles.
So what are some of the key foods in the high net gain? What are the high net gain nutrition foods that are accessible, that are reasonable for us to, say, pick up and incorporate in our diets more?
Well, in the beginning, I was eating a lot of pasta, rice, bread, a lot of starch, really. And I started switching out from kind of traditional grains like that to more, things called pseudo-grains, which are technically not grains at all. They're actually seeds. So things like amaranth, quinoa, buckwheat, wild rice, these types of things, which have quite a bit more nutrition, and they're also easier to digest because they are seeds, and they're gluten-free too. Making smoothies, that's a big one for me. That's what kind of got me into this, was just blending together all these foods to have an easily digestible, nutrient-dense type of nutrition to get into my system to help me speed recovery so I could become a better athlete. And in the beginning, that had pea protein and rice protein and hemp and flax and chia and savvy seed and all these nutrient-dense foods that then we created Vega, the product line. But in the beginning, it was me just making that for myself.
The other thing that's a key in all of this are alkaline-forming foods, right?
Exactly,
and
yeah.
So if you have more of those, that reduces inflammation, does it?
That's exactly it. So as an endurance athlete, that's huge. Of course, if you can bring down inflammation, you move more fluently. You don't have to work as hard to move your muscles, which means, again, you can serve energy. So, of course, you have more of it, and you can go longer before you run out of energy. And even for strength athletes, too, if you reduce inflammation, you can lift heavier weight, and lifting heavier weight is what makes you stronger. So it just allows you to train better and to train more efficiently. And even if you're not an athlete, if you reduce inflammation, you'll have more energy just walking across the room because, again, you don't spend as much, so at the end of the day, you're going to have more. Another thing, too, that it does do for athletes is it improves range of motion, which reduces the risk of injury, so quite a few benefits there.
And what are some of those foods?
So those are, general rule, the least processed foods and the foods that have the most minerals. So minerals are highly alkaline-forming, so sea vegetables are great, celery, tomatoes, vegetables in general are really good. And anything green. Green is chlorophyll, so that's that deep pigment in plants that's highly alkaline-forming. So blending in kale and spinach into a smoothie, or spirulina and chlorella, which are algae that are highly alkaline-forming, Or just eating a big salad, too. There's two things I do every day, regardless of what else I eat. I have a big smoothie in the morning, so I have Vega, and blend that up that has greens in it and helps reduce inflammation. And then I have a big salad every evening. So that's packed with all types of lettuce and beets and carrots and cucumbers and some nuts and seeds in there, too. And those are the two things that I do have every day.
And do you cook stuff out of this book?
Yeah, I do, not as much recently because I've been traveling so much. And the thing with the book is there are very basic recipes, too, that take very little time to prepare, which is honestly what I gravitate more toward. I'm not someone who wants to cook an elaborate meal each evening. I like doing it once in a while, but there are some recipes in there, too, that are a little more involved for people who want to try something new and, kind of push their culinary boundaries and maybe make something for a dinner party. There's a few options in there for those people too, but for the most part I do eat pretty basic.
Yeah, that grilled potato salad, I mean, just so that it looks good. I mean, it probably tastes good, right?
Right, and it's very simple. It's just, yeah, grilled potatoes and some herbs on there and, a bit of lemon juice, pretty basic.
So how do you find your own experience in terms of going out and eating? I mean, I'm guessing that's not something you do quite a bit.
No, not by choice, but when I'm going to a dinner meeting or something like that, it's actually a lot easier than I would have expected. There, most restaurants, of course, have salads, so I can order, a big salad or two or three, and most restaurants have vegetables. They have some steamed vegetables, they have rice, they have avocado, they have these basic things that they use in the recipes, and they'll usually just bring you some of that stuff. So even just brown rice with some avocado, a bit of sea salt, a bit of olive oil, and a salad, and some steamed vegetables is a really good meal. And you can get that at pretty much any decent restaurant will have those things on hand.
Hey, you talked earlier about the stress of trying something new and taking on a new lifestyle. That was one of the worries, that the food doesn't taste good. From the book, it seems like it will taste good. The other thing is that it's costly. I mean, is that what people are telling you, that they're worried about in terms of the Thrive diet, say?
I have heard that, but some things are a little more expensive, like spirulina and chlorella, for example. However, when you look at the amount of nutrition you get from them, you're actually getting a lot more nutrition than you would be if you were buying cheaper junky food. You get more calories from junk food, but you don't get more nutrition from junk food that's inexpensive. Also, things like buckwheat or amaranth, quinoa, you can go to the bulk section and load up on that. I can get completely full on $2 worth of quinoa, so it doesn't have to be expensive. And even good brown rice is a good staple, too, and good to have on hand. So it doesn't have to. And if you do have the luxury of being around a farmer's market when those are in season, can load up on a bunch of vegetables and berries, too, that you can freeze and have them when they're out of season. And usually it's less expensive to do it that way, too.
Well, we're seeing in Vancouver a lot of, say, vegan places. I live at Fraser and King Edward, and there are a couple of vegan places down the street here. I guess, is Vancouver at the front of a trend, say, in terms of more plant-based menus, or are we sort of, do you see that in other cities throughout North America as well?
Yeah, I've kind of seen, I don't know the rest of the world, but North America, I've definitely seen a shift in this direction over the last 3 years, a pretty significant one, and Vancouver is up there for sure. It does a great job with having vegetarian and vegan options. But there are a lot of other cities, too, that have a lot of great restaurants and farmers markets and accessibility to plant-based options. So, yeah, it's really nice to see just the rate at which this is becoming, I guess, a trend.
So you don't think it's a fad, that it'll go away in a couple of years or something like that, right?
No, I don't think it will. I think it's... It works, people feel good on it. They get sick less, they have more energy, and environmentally speaking, too, there's some significant benefits that I write about quite a bit in my previous book before this one. called Whole Foods to Thrive. The first third of that book, I look at environmental resources used in food production, and it's quite staggering when you look at the numbers and just see how much more efficient it is to produce foods like this than it is to, of course, grow food and feed it to an animal and then eat the animal. There's a big loss in energy there. So I think environmentally as well as health benefits, I really do think it's something that will be around.
And do you find that people like yourself, vegans, that the incidences of allergy, say, are less?
Well, yeah, a common allergen is dairy. A lot of people have allergies they don't even know they have, or at the very least sensitivities, if it's not a full-blown allergy, mm-hmm. but a sensitivity to dairy. A lot of people have sinus congestion, even mild sinus congestion, and just sort of put up with it. That's often a dairy issue. And that's an easy fix, of course. You just go without it for a while and see if your symptoms clear up, then there you go. You figure that out. But, yeah, I do find that dairy being a big one for allergy. So when people cut out dairy, they often do start to feel a little better or sometimes a lot better. It just depends on the person.
So the other thing that I think most people have a problem with is snacking. I mean, we do that quite a bit. There's a lot in this book that one can do to sort of, you know, if they wanted to snack, right?
Right, and I don't think snacking is a bad thing. I do it a lot. I actually rarely eat three meals. I graze throughout the day. I eat a lot of just a lot of good food. I think when you eat it, it's really... It can be any time, and I find there's actually advantages, too, in that you never get really hungry, you never get really full. So I find it's good for energy level, it's good for productivity, too. Of course, right after a big meal, people go back to their cubicle at the office, and they start getting tired around 2 or 3, and they need coffee because they're digesting this heavy food. And if you don't have that big bunch of heavy food from lunch in your stomach, then more blood can be in your brain, you can be thinking more clearly, and you can get more done. So... you know, Google, for example, the Googleplex in Mountain View, California, they've set it up that way. So there's all these cafeterias, they're all free. People just go and eat whenever they want. They don't have set meals. And they found that not only did sick days go down, but productivity went up. And we've actually mimicked that at Vega headquarters. So we have a lunchroom there. We have an amazing chef, and it's fully stocked with salads and smoothies and everything you could want. And you just go in and eat whenever you want. And it's really made a big difference.
Where is the headquarters for Vega?
It's in Burnaby.
Oh, I see. Okay, and Thrive Energy Labs. I've read about that. Are those throughout North America as well?
No, there's actually only one at the moment.
Oh, I see.
It's near Waterloo. So that was started by a guy named Johnny Karen, who read my first book, Thrive Diet, was inspired by it, started making a bunch of the recipes, and he has a chef background, so he actually started making them taste even better. And then opened Thrive Juice Bar, it was originally called. Now it's called Thrive Energy Lab because there's a lot more than just juice there. So the intention is to open those across the country, starting with downtown Toronto and Vancouver.
So that's like a restaurant now, I guess, right?
Right, yeah. We call it a fast casual restaurant, so there's not a huge amount of seating.
I see.
It's more of more kind of cafe style, I guess.
Yeah, the triathlons and ultramarathons that you participated in, are you retired from all that now?
Well, I don't do it competitively anymore. I still bike or run each day. I do something, and I do half marathons here and there for fun. I did last year. I did the Sun Run. I did the Vancouver Half Marathon. I'll do the Sun Run this year.
Yeah.
So I do races when I can, when I'm in town with a race going on. Sometimes I hop in, but yeah, I love running as much as I ever have. I just don't do it competitively anymore.
And the reason why you don't do it competitively anymore, did you find that it took a toll physically, like in terms of, say, muscle mass or bone density and the sort? I mean, did you notice a change there?
No, I actually really just didn't have the time anymore to dedicate the amount needed, especially with triathlon. Like, it's just the amount of training that you have to do to be competitive doing Ironman. Ironman's such a long event. You know, it's a 3.8-kilometer swim, 180-kilometer bike ride, and then a marathon, so 42.2 kilometers of running. And it just takes up your whole day if you're going to train for something like that. And I just found I just simply didn't have time with the other things that I wanted to do. And it was fun for a while. I did it professionally for 7 years, and And now I'm just really enjoying doing a whole bunch of other things that are equally as exciting and challenging to me.
Yeah, congratulations on this book and continued good luck with it, Brendan. I'm looking forward to trying some of the stuff out.
Thanks, Joseph. I appreciate it.
The book is called Thrive Energy Cookbook, 150 Functional Plant-Based Whole Food Recipes. It's published by Penguin. The website for more incidentally is at brendanbrazier.com. Its author, Brendan Brazier, joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plata.